This is a Clock Shelves Podcast Network production.
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of MCU and Me. As always, I am Paul Casey, and I'm joined today by someone I cannot wait to talk with. Go ahead and introduce yourself, sir.
My name is Steve Peterson.
Steve, a fantastic photographer, probably can offer up some great stuff as of for about one shooting location in particular. I'm very excited to discuss that. But Steve, I got to ask you, first and foremost, when kind of this idea of Marvel movie podcast sort of thing came about, you were one of the first people to say, I want to be on, I want to talk about stuff. So, you know, why Marvel movies? Were you a fan of Marvel comics? Sort of when did you get into this whole Marvel cinematic universe thing?
I'm an old man, so I was a big fan of the X-Men comics in the 90s. I saw the cartoon, and that, like, the first thing I saw that was, and I was immediately hooked. And from that, I got into the comics. I collected those for a long time, but I kind of fell off because with comics, I don't know if you've ever collected comics, it got to the point where I was having to buy like 20 episodes a month to keep up with the story because of all the crossovers. And as a kid with like a $5 allowance, that wasn't happening. So I kind of let go of that, but I kept on watching all the movies. You know, when the X-Men movie came out, that was super exciting for me. All the Spider-Man stuff. And then Iron Man and the Avengers, I really didn't know anything about them. I remember seeing, you know, Captain America and Iron Man were obviously they were around and I knew who they were, but I didn't know anything really about them. But being a movie fan and being a comic book fan, when I saw that Iron Man was coming out, I went and saw it opening night and it just changed my life. Like everything about it was amazing. It was one of the best comic movies I've ever seen. And since then I've seen every single Marvel movie opening night, that Thursday night premiere. It's the one, like the movies I look forward to the most every year. Like even when, was it Civil War came out? That came out the same year, I believe, as Batman vs. Superman. And anyone who knows me knows I'm like the biggest Batman fan out there. But Civil War was higher on my priority list than Batman vs. Superman. It's everything about the MCU is just perfection, in my opinion. Except for Ragnarok, but we'll get to that later.
So I've said it on the podcast before, but I'll reiterate it again since these are some of the early episodes. I read some comic books, things like that. I would watch some of the cartoons and things, but I was never really a big comic book collector for a similar reason, like you said, because a lot of times, you know, I think even now there's, you know, four or five different Spider-Man titles, for example, you know, and they may not always cross over, but when they do, and I'm not even talking like, you know, a huge crossover event, like say a Civil War in the comic books or something like that, but just keeping up with this character appears and then whatever, you know, and it is very difficult to get behind. And I was always more like, I'll sort of read the summaries of, you know, a lot of the major arcs and things like that. And also my childhood was more, I was more of a wrestling person. So I got to actually kind of, I mean, I know it sounds, you know, lame to some people, but to me, it was more like a real life superhero thing, you know, like every week, because it was good versus evil, you know, and they had fantastical costumes and things like that. So when it came to comics, I was like, oh, I have to read, you know, because I was just like, I could just watch two guys fight each other in the wrestling ring. But I'm not going to lie, when it came to the Marvel movies, I had seen, you know, the first, I think, two X-Men movies. Actually, I think one of my uncles took me because he liked the X-Men a lot, but I never really got into just the concept of comic book movies, things like that. I had seen, you know, you said about Batman, I had seen the 90s movies, Burton and Schumacher and things like that. But, you know, like even getting into like Batman Begins and, you know, the Nolan movies, like I never really got into it necessarily, partly because, and now I look back and think, oh my gosh, that's such a ridiculous thing to think. But I was like, I'm a grown up now, you know, like Iron Man 1 came out in 2008. I was getting ready to graduate high school and I was just like, I'm too grown up for these sorts of things now. Of course, that's incredibly, you know, false to think. But at the time I was just, because at that time I was also, I had been out of wrestling even for a few years. So I was just like, oh, this is, you know, kids stuff, you know, and I was just, for whatever reason, I was just not into it. But then, of course, I was also, oddly enough, I was getting like in back into Buffy and Lost and all those things around that same time. So I don't quite know where my barometer was in terms of childish versus not childish.
Well, it's ridiculous, and it kind of sucks for me because when I was growing up, you know, as a kid in middle school and grade school, I was super into X-Men. And I remember there's times like when I went shopping, you know, went school shopping with my mom to get clothes for the new year. They had the X-Men comics cartoons just came out. So there's all these X-Men shirts. And I was like, oh, I want those ones. I got this awesome shirt that had Wolverine on it. And I got made fun of so much as a kid for being into comic books. Like, oh, you're such, you know, you're a nerd and you're a loser. Like, look at this Wolverine guy in your shirt. Now, like, you go to like the gym, you have like grown ass men like trying to be Logan. And it just sucks that like in my time when it was like, you know, it was my thing, it wasn't cool. But now, like, if you don't like comics, now you're the weird one.
Yeah.
So it just, it's, for me, it was weird. And then now just like to get back into it now, I mean, like I never let it go, but now that it's such a big thing and I see all these people that are just like, oh man, I love Captain America and I love Iron Man. I'm like, dude, where was I, you know, or where were you 20 years ago when I was getting beat up and now this shit's cool. So kind of sucks.
No, I totally get it. Like I said, I was not, you know, I wasn't like against it, but it was just, for me, it was just never my thing. But it's funny you say that because I have a good, it's my, well, I'm not going to say exactly who it is, but it's a relative of mine and he's a larger guy, very tough. Like he works security at like some of the local nightclubs and things like that. And like he, you know, he's a big, tough guy. And he's very, very into, like, he is one of the biggest Batman fans I know. Like, he collects comics. He collects all sorts of stuff. He has pajamas of, you know, Batman and, you know, the Marvel characters and things like that. And he's gotten his kids into it and all that. And he was telling me years back about a friend of his when they were growing up. And they grew up not necessarily in the best neighborhood. And he said, now, again, this is all, you know, second, third hand. I heard this and I'm now telling it. But he said he saw a guy in his neighborhood literally curb stomp a person, like from American History X. Like he, but it was partly because the guy was making fun of somebody else or whatever. And he said that guy was super into comics and it kind of showed him that if you can, well, again, at the time, this is very outdated thinking, but if you're able to defend yourself and beat up other people, no one cares if you like comic books and nerdy type things.
Right.
But for me with the Marvel, universe, I didn't really get into it. I mentioned Buffy a few minutes ago. That was one of the only reasons that I got into it was because I had seen, you know, I was, you know, I'm a fan of Joss Whedon's work and I had seen he did Avengers and I was like, oh, cool. Like he's finally sort of getting his due, you know, Buffy and Firefly and that didn't, you know, Firefly and the Serenity film didn't necessarily do as well as people hoped, but like he's getting this amazing thing. And then it was said that he was going to be doing a TV series based in the thing, the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. series. And so I was like, well, I kind of want to watch his new show because I like his stuff. I guess I have to get into watching all of these films. So I took like a good week and a half and got from Iron Man all the way to Iron Man 3 and just watched all of like the phase one movies over the course of like a week and a half to sort of prepare myself for when Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. would premiere not long after.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how I got into it. And then after that, I've seen all of the movies, I believe all of them in theaters since. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's like for me, I even stopped. I got so excited, I stopped watching trailers for them just because I wanted to go in and just be blind and not know anything that's going on, and just experience it as a whole new thing. Even though like, a lot of the trailers aren't super spoilery, it's just so much fun to go in and just have 2 hours of brand new footage to watch. So I'm excited for what's it, this next one's coming out is Black Widow, and they got pushed back. So who knows what's going to happen with that, but I can't wait.
Well, our friend Kevin, who's been on, he was actually on this show already. He's been on Lost with Friends. I don't know if it's because of just the Marvel movies or whatever, but just in general, he doesn't watch trailers either. Because he feels very similarly where, you know, they're edited in such a way that they make you think something's happening when it's not. Or sometimes there are scenes where a character has a scar in the movie, but not in the trailer because they don't necessarily want to spoil something. Or, you know, there will just be scenes that for whatever reason, they put them in the trailer and then they kind of leave them out of the movie. And so for him, and I mean, I get it. I don't like seek out trailers. If they're somewhere and I happen to see them, I might, you know, take a peek, but I'm very similar in that same way, just where I'm just like, yeah, you know what? Cause I don't go to see movies that often. Probably within the last 5 to 10 years, I would say the Marvel movies, the new Star Wars trilogy, and you know, the like Solo and, you know, a few other films that came out in that franchise are pretty much some of the only movies that I've like made an effort, like, hey, I want to make sure I have a day off within the next week or so that I could go to the movies. If I go on a date or something like that, that I don't necessarily go to see something that I've wanted to see because I have to make sure that who I'm with is, you know, having a nice time or whatever. Whereas if I'm going to a Marvel movie or Star Wars or something like that, I'm like, no, I'm here because I want to be here. It's my time to enjoy this film. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, luckily for me, my wife is super into them also. So I'm like, hey, we're gonna go, like, don't make any plans on, was it May 24th, I think, is when Endgame came out. And I said, I don't care what you're doing, we're gonna see this. If you have other stuff, I'm going. And she's like, no, anything is going on, I'm canceling it. We're seeing Endgame. That's the most important thing going on right now. So luckily for me, she's super into it. And like you, I used to go to movies all the time, but now, unless it's like a Marvel movie or used to be DC, but even them, they're dropping the ball. So like pretty much Marvel's all I've seen in the past few years in the theater. Everything else I can just wait to get on Blu-ray.
Yeah, that's my I mean, once in a while there will be something, you know, like that I'll just be like, oh, you know, I like on my show Paul and All, actually Kevin and I do a thing every so often where we'll kind of like wrap up certain films, like all these films came out within the last few months, because he goes a lot, and I'll just be like, so, you know, what did you think of this or that or whatever? And then I'll say, you know, oh, this one, I'm actually might leave the house to go see this one, but for the most part I'm pretty much the same way. I'll just wait for it to come out like on a streaming service or, you know, Blu-ray or whatever, because there's nothing. I mean, you know, people argue the Marvel movies are kind of formulaic, but it's a formula that works, first of all. But whatever they're doing something that actually makes me want to leave the house. I hate leaving my house. Anybody who knows me knows, you know, and I could make the joke at the time of this recording, we're kind of in the trenches of this self-quarantine with this coronavirus thing. My life has not really been affected that much.
Yeah. We realized the same thing. Like yesterday here in Florida, they announced that they're closing all the beaches, all the restaurants, all the bars, all the nightclubs for 30 days. And like people are losing their mind. And I'm like, okay, so nothing changes. Gotcha. Good to go. Like aside from work, I don't really leave the house. And now I'm working from home because of the virus. So that's my only change is I get up and I walk to my living room instead of getting up and driving to work. So yeah, homebody for sure. Like, yeah, I don't want to go out, but yeah, Marvel, you release one every night. I'll be there every night. I don't care what's going on. Like they just draw me in and I need to see them as soon as possible. So
Exactly. So Iron Man 2 is what we're going to be discussing today. When I was putting these together, sort of getting a feeling for who would be on these shows and whatever, I knew one of the reasons, I'm not going to lie, one of the reasons that I thought for Iron Man 2 for you was because you've actually been to at least one of the filming locations, the Giant Donut, correct?
Correct.
So I thought, I figured, okay, he's been, you know, somewhere, so we could have a good conversation with that. But also, like we said before, kind of knowing how big of a fan you are, I was like, you know, because to me, I'm not going to, now, again, I haven't seen any of these since that first time I watched them through, however many years ago. This Iron Man movie is not, it's action-wise fantastic. I think it's action-wise better than Iron Man 1. I kind of liked Iron Man 1 better this time around.
Oh, it's definitely a better movie, Iron Man 1, for sure. Like, for me, every time an Avengers comes out, I've rewatched the entire series up to that point. So I've seen these numerous times. And Iron Man 2 was one actually I got back when they were still doing, like, those the digital copies that you can put on your iPod. I got one of those ones, so I threw it on my iPod, and, like, if I'm bored at work, I'll just throw it on. So I've probably seen Iron Man 2, Thor, and Captain America, because those all three I have on my iPod. I've seen them at least 100 times each, because I'll just get bored and throw it on and watch it. So I think this one's a great movie. Iron Man 1 is definitely a better film, but I do a lot, like, when I'm reading about stuff and, you know, the different trivias and everything, Iron Man 2 gets a lot of hate, which is one reason I wanted to be on it for this episode, because it's definitely not as good as the first one, but it's still an amazing sequel, and I just kind of want to defend it. That I don't understand why it gets as much hate as it does.
Well, one of the big things that I noticed about this movie versus the first one, and I completely understand, the first one was an origin story. Like you mentioned, not a lot of people, even if you were a comic book fan, not a lot of people necessarily knew, you know, Iron Man as sort of a major player. Right. Like you, the X-Men, the Incredible Hulk, because in the pop culture world, he had been around because of, you know, the 70s TV series and things like that. So Incredible Hulk, X-Men, Spider-Man were probably the biggest Marvel names, maybe Captain America, maybe. But arguably those other ones were kind of the biggest ones. So to launch this whole franchise almost around Iron Man, and definitely once they cast Robert Downey Jr., he definitely became the focal point of a lot of these early things. I get that Iron Man 1 had to be an origin story. And I mentioned on that episode, I actually did that one with Jake. Iron Man 1 is to me, it was very much a film in three parts. It was part one, he's in the Middle East, he needs to get out. Part two is him sort of figuring out what comes next and all the technology and kind of rebuilding the thing in his chest. And then three is the third act is that battle. And it's very much like a film in three parts. Now, Incredible Hulk was almost just, I don't want to say a standalone film, but because that character was already established, they didn't need to go through with all of that origin story stuff. They kind of gave it to us in a quick thing at the very beginning, and then it was, let's get right into the film. So with this, it was very interesting to see sort of how they kind of do that with Iron Man 2, in the fact that we've seen the origin on screen in Iron Man 1, but this film, I feel like it was a little too long in going back through it, because I feel like this, for whatever reason, I feel like there were scenes or there were moments where I feel like this movie could have been cut into maybe two different movies, because half of it is him trying to reconcile things, you know, with his dad, and then the other half is him battling Mickey Rourke's character. And I understand that they meshed because of, you know, the history of his dad and Mickey Rourke's dad and whatever, but I just felt like it was almost two movie, like, you know, sometimes when they'll have like a script for a movie and they'll like change it so that it fits into like a franchise title or something like that. I think they did that with like one of the Cloverfield movies. They were just like, oh, let's add one or two things and make it a Cloverfield movie. I know that's not the case with this, but this almost feels like it was two different screenplays kind of meshed into one. I don't know. That was just how I felt watching it this time.
I didn't really get that feeling at all. Just to touch on something quickly with Hulk, I'm not sure if you were aware, and I didn't hear it on the episode because I haven't heard it yet, obviously, but that was not originally a Marvel movie. That's owned by, I want to say, Paramount. So it was actually a loose sequel to the Eric Bana Hulk film. So that's why there was no origin story. It was just kind of thrown in there. And then they just added that one scene at the end. It wasn't even a post-credit scene, was it? It was before the credits when Tony comes in and talks to the general guy. I can't remember his name.
Ross.
Ross, there you go. And she says, oh, you know, about the suits and whatever. So yeah, that originally wasn't even supposed to be Marvel. But since Iron Man did so well, because that came out, I think, 3 months after Iron Man, they quickly went in and filmed that scene and threw it in there to bring it in with the rest of the series.
We touched on it a little bit, but let me ask you about that. So with that, and I mentioned it in that episode briefly, but I have I used to have a work friend at my old job. And I was talking to him once. I don't remember where, like what movies were out or whatever at the time, but I remember talking with him once about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I said something about, the Incredible Hulk, and it was before, Ross came back in some of the later films, but I was like, you know, I said something about the Incredible Hulk and he was like, oh, that one doesn't count. And I was like, what do you mean it doesn't count? Like, it has Robert Downey Jr. in it. Like, I believe Kevin Feige at least has a name credit on there. Like, you know, like I was like, for all intents and purposes, it's this. And they were like, no, it doesn't have Mark Ruffalo as the Hulk. Like, it does, like, none of the characters pretty much ever show up. And again, this was before, you know, Ross comes back in some of the later movies, spoiler for anybody out there. But, you know, they were like, oh, it just doesn't fit in, generally speaking. But I remember reading a thing before one of the recent Avengers where the directors of those movies, they were like talking about the previous things and they said it counted. Now, again, this conversation that I had with the work person was long before that. But do you, when you do your rewatch before the new movies come out, do you include that one in your rewatches?
Oh, 100%. It's part of, I mean, at the time when it came out, it was still part of it because they included that scene with Robert Downey Jr. So the fact that Mark Ruffalo is not in it isn't a continuity issue. It's just because, blanking on his name right now, Ed Norton is just really tough to work with. So he got fired and they hired Mark Ruffalo. So it's not like it wasn't part of the MCU. I think originally, like you were saying with how sometimes they write a script and just throw stuff in there, it wasn't originally part of it because there is no connection to it. But they threw in that scene at the end to tie back in there now that Iron Man did really well. Now they've brought it back and General Ross comes back in. And even in Endgame, he mentions the, you know, last time I was in New York, I kind of Harlem. So, I mean, they talk about it. It's part of the series. It's definitely part of my rewatch when I watch everything.
Yeah, that was my thing. I mean, because when I was doing my research. Now, you know, anybody out there listening, you want to talk somebody who does a lot of research. Steve here is the guy. He does a lot of research related things. But when I was doing just my quick research of like what falls into this, you know, Marvel universe, because, you know, there were all the like X-Men doesn't, you know, the original Spider-Man trilogy doesn't, you know, but everything like through Wikipedia and like, you know, other, you know, quote unquote, more legitimate sources like that almost always listed Incredible Hulk. And actually the first time I was watching it through, I believe my mother also wanted to see them, but she had seen the Avengers at that point. Cause she was ill and she was at my cousin's house. My cousin was taking care of her for a little while. And her son was, you know, all about the Avengers. He was maybe 5 years old at the time. So he just wanted to watch the Avengers movie a bunch of times. So she knew that Mark Ruffalo was Hulk. So when I said to her, oh, Ruffalo isn't in this one, and, you know, there's pretty much at that time, again, this was right after Iron Man 3, I was like, there's not really that many connections to it. She was like, okay, I'm going to skip that one then. So actually, when I just went to watch it this time for the podcast, she watched it for the first time, and I was like, what'd you think? She's like, I get it, but she said she wasn't necessarily as big a fan of that one, which I get, but I don't know, like, to me, it's there, because like we said, Downey is in it. They obviously kind of retroactively bring some stuff back in with, you know, Ross being there and whatever. I count it. I think if it falls, pretty much if Kevin Feige is a part of it, it's there, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because, like I was saying before, it's a loose sequel to the Ang Lee, Eric Bana film, which I don't consider part of the MCU because it's clearly not. But this movie, when it came out or when it was written, it was definitely meant to be a sequel because they referenced some of the first movie in the opening credits. But yeah, I don't count that one, so I don't know why I do that. But Incredible Hulk would definitely count. And it definitely is a standalone. You can skip that movie and still be completely in the loop of what's going on. Nothing really happens in that movie that matters to the rest of the universe. But it's a good movie. I like it, so I'm going to include it in my watches.
I believe this movie actually makes a reference to it as well.
They have part of it takes place at the same time. And they, when he's talking to, when Tony's talking to, what's his face at the end? Nick Fury. Why can't I remember names today? My God. You could see in the background on the TVs, it's showing the footage from when he has that Hulk, the Hulk has the fight with, Tim Roth at the college university. But other than that, I don't think there's any other mention. It's just a quick kind of background shot of the fight that they're doing.
Yeah, that was what I thought was that, because I remember a thing about the fact, because I didn't realize that the first time watching it. So I was actually on the lookout for that scene this time. And I was sitting here watching it and I just go, that's from Hulk. I'm just sitting here as I was watching it just a little bit ago before this recording. I'm just like, that's the Hulk scene. But yeah, I said about, to me, this was, it felt, and again, I know it wasn't the case, but to me, this kind of felt like two films in one. You don't necessarily feel that way about Iron Man 2?
No, I think it's one cohesive story, but I think there's definitely parts where it kind of drags and kind of like the opening scene with when they go to Monaco, that whole scene is kind of pointless and boring. I mean, it introduces Whiplash and we see what he's doing, but there's definitely I don't want to say it feels like two different movies, but there's definitely like here's part one and here's part two, and this is what's kind of going on here, and it still feels cohesive, but there's a definite split in those two halves of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I like the movie, you know, and I like the two kind of stories, but it's just it feels like it could have been easily split between like the one of these could have been even Iron Man 3, you know, not the actual Iron Man 3, but you know what I mean? Like they could have split this into two movies, or that they could have done, you know, back at the time, the Howard Stark segments could have almost been its own Disney Plus miniseries if such a thing existed back then.
Yeah, those are the parts that always kind of take me out of it, especially after Captain America came out and we see that we had like a much younger Howard Stark in there, played by whoever plays him. And like the time difference between those two movies, like the 60s or 70s that the videos that Tony's watching and then what happened in Captain America. I mean, it's not that huge a time difference to see him age that quickly. It's just kind of weird I think they messed up their timeline a bit with that. But yeah, definitely all that stuff where he's watching the videos and trying to see what his father wanted. It kind of takes you out. It doesn't feel like it fits the flow of the film, like you're saying.
Yeah. I always get a chuckle out of those scenes because I mean, and it's supposed to be, but that's very much Disney. That's a Walt Disney thing. It's mm-hmm. if anybody out there has ever seen Walt Disney sort of introducing the concept for Epcot or Walt Disney World in general. That's very much what, you know, the world of tomorrow and all that. And like, he even has the hair and the mustache similar to Walt Disney. And of course, now looking back, they didn't know it then, but looking back on the fact that Disney owns these films, it makes it even funnier. But that's all I see during that entire thing, is they're clearly trying to almost parody Walt Disney. I like the story. You know, the fact that he didn't necessarily get along with his father, and, you know, but his father actually did believe in him all that time, and, you know, trying to find all that, whatever. I like it, but like you said, it doesn't necessarily work within the flow of going up against Whiplash and Hammer.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's see if I can find here, just to quickly sort of recap the plot of the film. I mean, we kind of broke a lot of it down anyway. Now I watched this. I don't know if it makes any difference, because I've never owned any of them. Have you watched any of them on Disney Plus? Do you know if there is much of a difference, like time wise or anything like that?
No, I own them all on. Like, I bought them 7 times at least by now. I bought the DVDs, then I upgraded to Blu-ray, and halfway through Blu-ray collecting, I switched over to the I started buying the Steelbooks, and then so I went back and bought all of them again to get the Steelbooks, and then I just upgraded to the 4K ones a few months ago. So I've bought them tons and tons of times. I've never watched Disney Plus, so I don't know if there's a difference. I would assume it's the exact same movie, but they might cut stuff out or edit it for something, but yeah.
Yeah, I to be fair, I don't know. I think the first time I watched them through, I either illegally downloaded them or borrowed them off of somebody or whatever. And it, like I said, it's been several years, but I knew when it came time to doing most of these, I'm like, well, I already have Disney Plus because I'm one of those people. I wanted to see what it was all about. So I was like, perfect use for Disney Plus.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, Russia, we see Vanko. Yeah. Yep. Do you like Mickey Rourke as an actor?
I don't know. I know back in like into like the 80s, he was like a big thing. But all I really know him from is this and Sin City. And I liked him in both of these. So as far as that goes, sure. But I mean, that's 2 movies he's been in. So I can't really say anything about him otherwise.
To be fair, I haven't seen him in much of anything either. He's not bad, but I still don't know all these years later. I still don't know if he was the right part for this movie. I don't mm-hmm. dislike it. I think it's good, but I don't have anybody off the top of my head of like who could have done it better, but I still don't know if he was quite right in my opinion.
Yeah, I've never really thought about it. He's one of those ones where I don't hate him, but I don't like him. For me, he fit well enough, so.
Yeah. I don't know. It's one of those weird things I feel like, you know, kind of touched on it before with regards to General Ross, but it's like if some of these characters were, and I don't necessarily mean actors, I mean characters, if they had been kind of better, might we have seen more of them? You know, like we don't really see, I mean, we see, you know, Pepper Potts and, you know, some of the like Happy Hogan and that in some of the later movies, but a lot of these villains until we get to the next movie in the series, we don't really see any of the villains pop up anywhere later, which is very unlike the comic books where, you know, all of the heroes sort of have, you know, to go with the Batman thing, their rogues gallery of villains. You would think at some point one of these villains would have popped up again.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. But at the same time, like, and I know there's a lot of complaints for Iron Man 2 because he fought another mech suit character. So even to bring him back, you know, for a third movie or a fourth movie or whatever, people don't want to see that. They want to see the hero fight a bunch of different people, and to bring them back would just be like, but you already beat him, so why is he back again? It wouldn't be as interesting, unless it's like a big one like Thanos or something. But yeah, I can't imagine like having two or more movies where it was the same villain coming back to fight again. It'd be like, we did this already, move on. So I'm fine with not seeing them again. There's especially with him, like, there was, like, I didn't like the fact that he fought another villain that was just like, oh, I have another suit and now we're twins again. And yeah, they could have come up with something different. He has so many other villains to go against that it was just kind of repetitive for me.
Oh, see, I like this one better in the sense of this guy actually knew how to do things with the suit, whereas...
No, yeah, I like that because he was more of Tony's equal, but having come off of Iron Man and then coming to Iron Man 2, and it's basically like, oh, well, here's another guy that's going to build another suit and just try to be like you again. It felt a little bit rehashed, but I do like that it was more of, hey, I'm inventing my own thing and doing my own stuff, especially with the added whips, which I believe was actually an amalgamation of two comic book characters. I remember reading that somewhere. I don't remember who they were. It's Whiplash and someone else, and they just called him Whiplash. But yeah, I would not want to see him or any of the villains for that matter in another movie, like, unless it's, you know, a big one like Thanos or whatever. Just keep on moving on. Let's get through the gallery, as you say.
Yeah. So we see Vanko basically like, oh, I'm going to take him down. I'm just giving a quick recap. And Stark is presenting things at Stark Expo. And then he notices that the palladium core in the arc reactor is pretty much slowly killing him. Eventually, he appoints Pepper Potts as CEO. And he decides to race at the Monaco Grand Prix. Again, that's one of those things where, and I get it, is because they needed to introduce Vanko to him and whatever. But it was just like, why are we going here all of a sudden? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. There's just certain things where it feels like all of these, you know, he should be focused on running the country. But then suddenly it's like, let's just go to Monaco.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of trying to show how Tony is just kind of, I'm going to do what I want. I don't care. I just, you know, I have the Iron Man suit. I'm invincible. I'll do it. Like, I could do anything. But yeah, it just felt so out of place that he's like, you know, I'm going and speaking in front of like the government about my suit and appointing Pepper Potts as my new CEO. Then let's just take a trip over to Monaco and watch the race real quick. Like, eh, okay. That's kind of weird, but. He's rich, so do what you want. Have fun.
Yeah. Speaking of the government thing, I love that scene.
Mm-hmm.
Gary Shandling, hilarious. I believe he represents Pennsylvania, so that kind of gave me a little bit of a cheer because I'm from Pennsylvania. But I don't know. I just, you know, I like that. And I've said before, I'm not a big fan of Robert Downey Jr. He seems kind of like a jerk as a person, but he fits this part really well because that's what Tony Stark basically is. It just feels like at a certain point they blend into one person. When does Downey turn off being Tony Stark and whatever? But I think he does a really good job here of, it's my thing, it's me, you're not taking the suit. I love that.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite scenes in the movie. Everything about that is just so much fun. And like, one thing I really love about it is, I think this is the first movie where they really kind of saw Sam Rockwell as a person. And I kind of hated him because he's so good at playing a dick. Like, Justin Hammer is such a just cheesy idiot dick. But now I've seen him in other stuff and I love him. So it's just kind of how great of an actor he is that he can pull off that role. He was just so much fun. Watching again today, like, I love him, Justin Hammer, as a character. Like, that's one villain I would like to come back just because he was just fun, you know. But how do you see Robert Downey Jr. as not a nice guy? He seems like the coolest, chillest, down-to-earth person, like, out there.
So one of the things that I remember, and again, it's coming at it from a different perspective. Like I said, I was a big fan of Joss Whedon's work, right? So when he mm-hmm. signed on to do, I don't remember if it was the first Avengers or the second Avengers. I can't remember which it was, but at one point I saw an interview with Downey where somebody was like, oh, have you read the script? And he's like, no, I haven't, but I know as soon as I get it, I'm going to rip it in half and tell him to write it again, no matter what it says. And I'm just like, okay. That's a dick thing to say.
Yeah, I've never seen that before, but I could understand where you're coming from then.
I mean, again, I don't know the guy. I've never met the guy. He might be, you know, an incredibly nice person. I just feel like from the things I've seen of him, it almost feels like he doesn't necessarily let Tony Stark end. Because even I feel like in a few other films I've seen him in, it's almost like he's playing a very similar character. So that to me more says he's like that in real life than he's just really good at playing Tony Stark.
Well, that was one of the great things about casting him, is that he, like in the 90s, I think it was, had like a, maybe earlier, I don't know, had a huge like drinking and drug problem. And in the comics, so did Tony Stark. So when they cast him, it was just like, it was a perfect casting because he's been through the same things. And they kind of touch on that in this movie, where he's drinking and getting out of control. And that was like a reflection on his real life. So there's definitely parts of him that bleed into the character. But yeah, from the few things I've seen, and maybe just because I just follow him on social media, and you have to play nice on social media. But all the stuff he posts, he just seems like a cool guy. But who knows? It could all be an act.
Like I said, I don't know. I don't follow him on social media, so I can't necessarily say anything to that. And I haven't seen that many interviews with him or anything like that. But just the few things that I've seen, I'm just like, I don't know. There's something about the guy that rubs me the wrong way. That's just me. I could end up meeting him one day, and he could be the nicest person, and I will gladly admit that I'm wrong. But I don't know. There's just something about him where I've just, I don't know.
I think that's one guy I'll never meet, unfortunately. I would love to meet him, meet Tony Stark, but yeah, that's not going to happen. So,
we also get introduced to, well, she lists herself originally as Natalie Rushman, Scarlett Johansson's character, who goes on to be arguably one of the biggest characters in the entirety of the MCU. And I got to ask, you know, you said maybe you were watching things at the time or reading articles or whatever, but when you saw this, did you know who she was originally supposed to be at the time?
No, not at all. And I believe when it came out, she wasn't really a big actress at the time either. So it wasn't like, oh my God, they cast this huge person. It was just, oh, there's this person. And I've seen her in a few movies and all right, cool. What's going to happen? So I had no idea.
Yeah. I mean, she has since, of course, gone on to be one of the biggest actresses in cinema at the moment. I think she's very good. It wasn't, and it's very funny, and, you know, people may roll their eyes at this or whatever. One of the things, I'm not saying it's good, but one of the things is she's, you know, incredibly attractive, right? So a lot of guys, first off, oh, she's hot and she can kick ass and all these things. It wasn't until, and I'm not saying that I was like, oh, she's unattractive. I don't base people on that. But I would watch these things, and I would see her in interviews, and, you know, she would always rank as, like, you know, one of the hottest women in the world and whatever. I never got that impression of her until finally the Avengers movie, where I was like, oh, I get it now. I know that sounds really weird. Uh-huh. Sounds a little shallow. I get it. But I was just like, even watching these the first time, like seeing this, I was like, okay, she's pretty and she could kick ass, like, I get it. But I still didn't see where she was constantly being ranked, like, you know, top five hottest women in the world. I don't know, maybe that was just me, but
probably just you.
I think it was.
I remember her in Ghost World. It was an older indie movie with her and Thora Birch, and they're just kind of like these two kind of like nerdy punk losers, and for that, like, that's my type of person. So, like, when I saw her in that, she was kind of playing just this plain Jane, you know, kind of freak. I thought it was really cool. And then she shows up in Iron Man and, you know, doing all the stuff that she's doing in that. Yeah, it's impressive. So I'm glad that they added her in there. But yeah, I had no idea who she was going to be when she first showed up. I figured it would just be Tony's new Pepper to, you know, help out with his assistance or whatever.
Yeah.
So
I got to say, though, that the scene, I don't quite remember where it falls in here, but the scene when she takes down Happy in the boxing ring, even knowing, you know, like you said, we're supposed to be as of this recording, we're supposed to be getting her film soon and whatever, I still, like, got excited for that scene. I'm just like, yeah, because in that
moment. First scene. Yeah, that's her first scene. She comes in, she walks in, and then Happy's, you know, being typical Happy and talking down to her. You know, I'll be late. And then she just, bam, throws him down. That's an awesome, awesome move that she did, an awesome scene.
Yes. We also see one of my, you know, we said about the scene at the congressional hearing or whatever. And I believe when Jake and I did Iron Man, we talked about it very briefly, but the fact that, you know, they call Lieutenant Colonel Rhodes in, and one of his, I think it's like his very first line is like, "It's me, I'm here. Let's move on," or "Let's get over it," or something. And I always chuckle now, and I guess a lot of people do as well, because it's very much, yeah, he's talking to Tony, but he's also talking to the audience of, yes, I am the actor playing this character now.
And thank God you are, because I hate Terrence Howard so much. So that was like, I hate when they recast stuff. It throws off the continuity of it sometimes. Especially with Ruffalo as Hulk. Like, I love him as Hulk so much. I wish they can just refilm the entire Hulk movie with Ruffalo and get rid of Norton. But this one is one change I love. Like, get rid of Terrence Howard. I thought he was terrible. He didn't fit the role at all. And Don Cheadle, I love him. I've been a huge fan of his for a long time. So to see him come in and be a part of that, that was great. And yeah, I love that little nod to the audience there.
That was actually something that in the first Iron Man we talked about, I made the comment of like, I wonder if there's anybody out there, you know, people make fan cuts of films all the time. I wonder if anybody has kind of taken Don Cheadle's face and like CGI'd over Terrence Howard in the first Iron Man.
I mean, with that new like deep fake cuts they're doing whatever now, have you seen those?
No.
Those are, oh my God, they're insane. There's this new program and like it takes like, I don't know how it works, but you could take a picture of like anyone and you could put it on anyone else's face and it does all the angles, all the movements, everything's like perfect. Like you can't even tell the difference. There's one that someone put out recently. They recast Back to the Future with Tom Holland as Marty and Robert Downey Jr. as Doc. And it's the scene where they're walking through the high school in the 50s and they're talking about the Enchantment Under the Sea dance. And aside from the voices, you would think that they did the whole acting themselves because it's so realistic looking. It's kind of frightening. But yeah, if someone could do that with Don Cheadle and put him over Terrence Howard in the first movie, I'd buy that again in a heartbeat.
Well, that's what I said. I was like, I wonder, I mean, especially with Disney, you know, they own everything now.
Yeah.
You know, like they own pretty much all of George Lucas's technology. Like, why couldn't they do it? And, you know, Jake made the comment probably because of contracts or something like that. But I wouldn't be surprised if somebody out there has done that. And I guess there's also the comment in the first Iron Man where that character says he's looking at the suits and he says next time. And of course, mm-hmm. that being the fact that Terrence Howard didn't get to do it next time because there was no next time for him. But the character of Rhodes did get to put one of the suits on in this movie.
Yeah, that was a great scene in the first one where they hinted at that war machine. That got me really excited.
Yeah. Eventually, the two of them, that being Rhodes and Stark, do get into a fight. I believe Tony calls him War Machine during that party, right? Or during that fight or something?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and
yeah, if you want to be the War Machine, then whatever. Yeah, I think that's where he first gets the name in that scene.
Yeah. And then Rhodes goes on to take the suit, which, I mean, I get it. They made up by the end, but, you know, it's kind of that thing of like, oh, he was your friend and you betrayed him. And, you know, I don't know if we were supposed to feel that as the audience, but that's always what I think in that moment is like, you know, should Rhodes have taken the suit? I know he was, you know, under orders to, you know, figure it out and all this other stuff, but that brief moment. And again, they got me as the audience. If I'm feeling those things, maybe that's, they got me. I'm supposed to be feeling those things, but that's what I think every time.
Well, I mean, they touch on it at the donut scene where Fury says, "Yo, oh, he took your suit, the suit that requires all the security to get into. He just took it." So Tony knew what he was doing. Tony was giving it to him. He just kind of did it in a roundabout way where he didn't put the security measures on it for him. So I didn't feel too bad.
Well, okay, the donut scene, which is pretty much what comes next after Tony and Rhodes destroy most of his house is the donut shop scene. We get the reveal of Scarlett Johansson's character, but you've been to that donut shop. What can you tell us?
It's a donut shop. It's actually a very famous donut shop. The inside for the movie was built as a set. They don't have any inside seating. It's about 10 minutes from LAX over in Los Angeles. It's open 24 hours a day. It's been in other movies such as Earth Girls Are Easy. And it was in another movie. I've posted it on my page before. I can't think what it's in. They also featured it in Arrested Development, and it's been copied numerous times. The Lard Lad Donuts from Simpsons is a reference to Randy's Donuts.
That's what I always think of is the Simpsons.
Yeah, it's a direct reference to that. And then they've also used a similar building in Mars Attacks, although that was not the same one, unfortunately. I was really hoping to get a shot for that, but it was in some other city somewhere. But yeah, the donuts are really good. I'm not a huge donut fan, but they're really tasty donuts. And it's a cool small little building, and it looks exactly like it does from outside. So I got my shots of Tony sitting up in the donut. And it's fun times. I actually won a contest from them last year for National Donut Day. They had a thing on Instagram where if you post a picture and tag them in it, they'll pick a random 50 people. So I posted my Iron Man 2 picture and I tagged them in it, and I got selected for a dozen free donuts to use by the end of the year, which unfortunately I was not going back to LA, so I didn't get to use it. But it was cool that they noticed it. So.
Oh, that kind of stinks about not being able to use the thing, but I mean, I love seeing the stuff, and like I said, remembering that you had that picture, I knew that, you know, we'd have to talk about it here, but yeah, I'm think of that donut. Obviously I think of this scene, but I more think of The Simpsons. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Now that I've seen Iron Man and been there, like that's my first – anytime I see that somewhere else, I think of that. But the first time I saw it definitely brought me back to The Simpsons.
Yeah. I didn't – I mean, again, I don't even think when I was in L.A., I don't think I saw it there unless I was just – maybe saw it in passing or whatever. But I didn't know that the interior wasn't the interior there.
And it's a tiny little shop, and there's no seats, nothing. You have to eat in your car or outside in the parking lot.
But it's in that scene where Fury talks about, like you said, he mentions the you know, fact that Rhodey didn't really steal the suit, and between that and another scene at the house, Fury talks about the fact that Howard Stark, being one of the original founders of S.H.I.E.L.D. and gives Tony a giant crate and says that he's basically putting him on house arrest until he figures out his issue. And again, I get what you were saying about the fact that, you know, the timelines don't seem to match up with the actor choices and things like that. I liked, I can't remember the guy's name who they have as Howard Stark here. Like I said, I think did a good job, especially since it's very much supposed to be Walt Disney. But I like the fact that they continued to use that, because in that scene later on, when he has built up things a little bit more and we see a very kind of prototype version of Captain America's shield in in Stark's lab there, very much setting up in it, you know, Hulk did it too, but very much setting up the fact that we were going to be getting Captain America. And then like I said, I'm a, you know, fan of the TV shows too. They kind of tied it all back with Agent Carter as well, and well, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. a little bit too, but Agent Carter as well from the TV side. Then I think it's just the final thing, right?
They go into the whole scene, which is one thing I don't like about this movie, and it's kind of – I just never understood it maybe. So he goes back to Stark Industries, and he's talking to Pepper, And then he picks up, he sees the old display map thing of the old Stark Expo. And he's looking at it, and all of a sudden he's like, this solves everything. And then he brings it back, and then he just kind of does a bunch of technology. Throw these things here, 3D scan, this and that, wrap it around in a circle. Oh, we have a new element. Like, what? Like, I don't know. Maybe I don't get it. Maybe it's just, it was just kind of crazy that he invented an element, whatever, 20-something years ago, and then hid it into a map of the Stark Expo for Tony. Like, I don't know. Well, that part just kind of lost me.
I'm now that you say it, like, I feel that way as well, and especially because, like, Fury knew, but he didn't know, but he knew enough to give Tony some clues. Like, yeah. Just be helpful, man.
I mean, like, and I kind of get it because I believe that Howard Stark invented the arc reactor technology. And if that's what Tony's using to power his suit and power his body, then it would make sense that Howard knows something about it and he could leave this there for future use. But, like, why wouldn't you just put it on, like, a disc or something? Like, just the whole, like, oh, I made this whole map and I designed this expo to be, if you take out the trees and you take out the garbage cans and you just rearrange the food vendors, then all of a sudden, like,
yeah, that was the, yeah, when he's,
it was a bit much.
When he's there and he's just trying to, and I didn't, and I'm not a science guy, so maybe that's throwing me off a little as well, but he does all of these things and he's just like, put all of the things there, like you said, the trees and connect everything around it, and then he just kind of holds it in his hand, and Jarvis yeah. is just like, oh, we can't synthesize it. Synthesize what? What, like, what exactly are it's, we, what is here? What is this? Like, most elements, they, it's a, yeah, go ahead.
It's a new element from what I understand in the thing is that they invented a new element and they couldn't synthesize this new element until Tony did magic and put stuff in a thing that circles around. And then I don't know. That's one part of this movie I just absolutely hate, because I'm fine with you saying, hey, I built this crazy armor out of a box of scraps in a cave. Great. I have this magic hammer that I can fly through the air with and crush things. Great. I can turn into this green, you know, raging Hulk monster. Great. But then this one's like, I took a map and I made it into a sphere and then I put some stuff on it and now I have a new element and I can't die.
Yeah, there's no, well, the thing is with, you know, he built the suit in the cave. There's at least somewhat of an explanation. We see him working with, like, soldering irons, you know, like all that sorts of stuff. With Hulk, it's like, okay, there's gamma radiation in his blood. I'm not saying that's scientifically accurate, but there's at least an explanation. With Thor, with the hammer, there's the concept of they understand that, you know, they have a far greater intelligence than us, and he says it at the one point, something about, like, we see it as magic, they see it as, you know, science, it's all the same thing, whatever. I can even buy that, but this is just, there's no explanation other than he made a ball out of 3D images and suddenly, well, okay, now what, like, there's, what am I, I'm seeing a glowing ball of what is
and I
it?
Think that's the issue, is that they go from that scene and then they cut right to him finishing it. There's no, like, well, if I could do this, if I take these things and combine them together, it's just, I have this glowing ball. And the next scene is, oh, you found the shield. Let me put it under this tube so it levels out. And now I can turn this wrench to put the thing into the new triangle arc reactor. And it's done. I have super strength. Like, I don't know.
But there's nothing tells us what this glowing ball is.
Yeah.
You know, like, nothing tells us what it's like. Elements are still made out of things.
I think they're trying to say that it's the, whatever was in the original arc reactor was never meant to power a person. So it was poisoning him. And then somehow Howard knew that he would use that to do whatever. So he made this new element and then hid it in a map so Tony could find it later to replace that element in the arc reactor with this new element that's not going to poison him. That's what I'm taking from it. But it's just still, like, even for a superhero movie, it's so far-fetched that it just takes me out of it. And I'm like, just skip that scene. The whole poisoning element was, it was, that whole thing was pointless. There was no reason to that at all. whatever.
Well, I mean, for him personally, I get that where he, cause
oh,
he
for
was,
sure. Yeah.
You know, like he gave his company away and he, you know, he was just like, well, what's the point of anything anymore? I'm dying. Like, I get all that, but I just, for as much as I said, I feel like this could have been made into two movies. And we said, you know, there are some parts that are dragging. That's the only part where I wish there was actually more scenes and more yeah. explanation.
No, definitely.
But so then he takes the new arc reactor and suit and then goes to the expo where Hammer is presenting his new stuff. We didn't really touch much on Vanko sort of getting out of prison, teaming with Hammer. I don't know. He doesn't seem as much a villain as he in the second half of the movie as he did Vanko.
I mean, I don't really ever see him as a villain the entire time. Like for me in this movie, the villain was Hammer because he's the one that's trying to take over the world basically. And he wants to destroy Tony and do all this other stuff. And he wants to commandeer the entire army, Navy, Marines, and take over all their suits, whatever. Or just, you know, not take them over, but be the guy that gets all the money from it and does the whole thing. And all that Vanko wants, he just wants to kill Tony. He says, you know what? You fucked over my parents, or my dad, or whatever. Your dad kicked my dad out of town, took credit for the arc reactor. I just want you to be dead. But Hammer's the one that kind of wants to have the limelight and be like the big bad guy. He just doesn't know how to do it. So I always felt that Vanko was more of just Hammer's lackey. And then at the last minute, Vanko's like, oh, guess what? I'm going to take over, and now I have control of your suits, and now it's my turn again. It's very flippy-floppy.
Well, but realistically, if Tony, and I don't even mean Iron Man, if Tony is our hero, right, he's the guy we're supposed to root for, whether he's mm-hmm. a good guy or a bad, because he does a lot of, like, bad things, like, morally speaking, but he's our good guy. He's our main character. So if somebody wants to kill him for whatever, you know, for vengeance for his father or whatever, realistically, that should be the guy that is the bad guy. I mean, I get what you're saying. Like, I totally think Hammer is more the bad guy because he's, like you know, we referenced DC a little bit ago. He's almost the Lex Luthor sort of, where mm-hmm. he's just like, I have grandiose plans, and there's actually a method to all of this. Whereas Vanko is just like, I have power, I have brains, but I have power on my side, and I'm just gonna kill him. Whereas, you know, Hammer is more just like, let's be a little methodical with this. Let me take over the military. Then I want to be, you know, maybe a government representative and then slowly sort of take over things. I get it.
He's in it for the long con, where Vanko just seems to be he's in the background a lot. I mean, he comes out in Monaco and he's like, oh, I have these whips and whatever. And then he's in jail. Then he escapes, and he escapes only because Hammer helps him out. And then Hammer hires him again. So it's you have this the higher authority hiring the henchman to do his bidding. And then it's not until the end where he's like, oh, well, guess what? Yeah, I just took over. And then Hammer's like, oh, crap, what do I do? And then that's finally when Vanko becomes more of the villain. But like, his whole character I thought was just kind of weak. And like I said before, it has just like putting him in another suit. Like Iron Man has so many villains that they could have done to just throw another guy in a suit at him just seemed very redundant and eh.
I don't disagree. I feel like that's may have been a product of sequels at the time. Even I know this is what 2010, but how many times were a lot of sequels just the same thing, but you know, like one or two story elements have changed. So that might, I mean,
Superman's fought Lex Luthor, what, six times now?
Yeah.
Like, let's move on. Find someone different.
Yeah. So I feel like that might've just been that. I think they changed it up enough. And I think the addition of Hammer is sort of, because realistically these two characters together almost make up the one character from Iron Man 1,
mm-hmm.
you know? So to split it into two different people here, but I do like that Vanko, you know, kind of took over all of the machines. I don't know. There's a part of me that was like, why only four things of the military? Hammer seemed to have forgotten the fact that the Coast Guard exists.
I mean, it's like the four biggest branches, I guess. And if you really want to get into all the different government things, you can take over Parks and Rec next. Like, just let's focus on the four big ones, and then
oh my gosh, have Ron Swanson take it down.
That would be fantastic.
That's what I want to see. Somebody make that YouTube, make that happen. And then there's not really much after. There's the final battle of basically Tony flying around, outrunning a bunch of drones, and he gets Rhodey back on his side. And then I do like the when he does the giant, I don't know, laser thing, and Rhodey is just like, why didn't you do that? And he's like, I can only do it once, because then that explains away the fact that he doesn't use it any other time. Cause like as the movies go forward, you know, people would ask the creative teams behind all of these, well, why is Iron Man getting a movie after the Avengers? Why doesn't he, you know, and he has to fight a villain or whatever. Why doesn't he just call up, you know, hey, Thor, hey, Incredible Hulk, hey, come help me. And, you know, people would always say that, like, why don't they just all team up all the time? And I like the fact that in this, with just this one weapon, he's just like, it was a one-time thing. It'll never happen again. Yeah. I like that.
Also, fun thing to mention in that scene, or a little bit earlier when they're flying around, is that kid that almost gets killed by the robots. That has been confirmed that was a young Peter Parker.
Yes. When I saw it, I forgot that was in this one. I don't know why I thought that was in the third one. But when I saw this one, I'm just like, oh, hey, that's because I thought they had said that. And I think like we mentioned earlier about kind of retroactively including some Hulk stuff. I think Martin Starr, we said his character like later on appears in one of the Spider-Man.
Oh,
films,
yeah.
Or
he was a college student in Hulk, and then he becomes a teacher in Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah. And of course it's not a brief scene, but the thing of Black Widow going through and taking out all of the guys at Hammer's base or facility or whatever, and Happy Hogan takes out the one guy, and he's just like, I got him.
Yeah, that was a fun scene. The choreography in that fight was fantastic.
Yes. And that's one of the things that I like about these movies, is they do a really good job with that, because they do a good enough job with everybody's fights are different enough. Like we go on to find out, you know, about the Black Widow character, you know, she was a Russian spy, or at least trained, you know, to all that stuff. And she very much has that style of fighting. Whereas some of the others, it's just like Hulk is just straight up brute strength, you know, and they all have their own distinct styles. And I really like that about all of these.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, at the very end, Stark is, I mean, unless I'm skipping over anything super important, Stark says, or finds out from Fury, that he's not going to be part of the Avengers, or it doesn't seem like he's going to be part of the Avengers. Did I skip over anything important?
No, they finished the battle, and then Rhodey basically just says he's going to take the suit, keep it for a while. And then they cut to that scene where they're talking to Fury, and basically said that they want Iron Man as part of the team, but not Tony Stark, which he says, well, but I am Iron Man, so good luck with that. And then he trades, he says, you know what, I'll come on as a consultant for free if you do me a favor. And that's when they get their medals from Gary Shandling, whatever his name is.
The one thing, that's the scene where we see the scene from Hulk on one of the
correct
monitors there. And I think they've since said it's incorrect that they had it there. I think it was just kind of like a hint towards the wider thing, but they didn't necessarily intend for it. There's on one of the maps there, there's like a big circle over somewhere in Africa, and I think that's supposed to be a clue as to Black Panther, but I think they have since said it's not necessarily supposed to be referencing Wakanda, because it's too early for them to know anything that's going on there, I believe. I could be wrong on that, though.
It's possible. Yeah, they throw in a lot of stuff like that. I know, like, X-Men have done that, too, where they just throw in some cool Easter eggs because you don't know how long you're going to go. I mean, at this point, this is only the third movie, well, technically the second, because, I mean, it wasn't Hulk wasn't a Marvel movie, like we said. So it was only really the second movie, and they don't really know how far they're going to go with that. So you want to throw in as much as you can for your fans. But then once you get to, you know, movie 27, and you're like, oh, shit, we're just learning about Wakanda now. Yeah, they didn't know anything about that back then. Just forget it. So,
yeah. And then, yeah, we see the scene with the senator, where he hits, Tony with the pin. I like that. Mm-hmm. And then that's pretty much it. You know, there's the post credit scene with Coulson finding Thor's hammer, but I feel like that's pretty much this movie. Is there anything that I missed?
I don't think so. I mean, that's pretty much all of it. The one thing I did want to bring up at one point was when Tony first gets to the Stark Expo back in the beginning of the movie, seeing how far they've come with the technology, because even in that, which I guess in the cinematic universe was only like 7 or 8 years ago, I think, to see him go from I'm landing in this thing and I have this giant robot contraption removing my armor for me, to now where he just has like a pair of glasses, he presses a button and his whole body becomes a suit of armor with the nanotech. I just love how they show the advancement in the technology in the universe is really cool.
Well, even from when he lands on the stage and he has all of that stuff to later on, it's a briefcase.
Yeah.
When he's at the Monaco thing and he kind of just holds the briefcase out, slips his arms through, and it just kind of builds around him. I get what you're saying. I do like that, but I like that. I mean, even that was a bit of, you know, kind of a technological jump from he has to be, you know, in the first one where it takes it apart piece by piece. And at least at the beginning of this one, it takes it apart like limb by limb almost, whereas he has that briefcase that just boom, fits right over him in like a split second.
Yeah. Have you ever seen like any of the comic book stuff where he's putting the suit on, like in the old original comics?
I don't think so.
Oh, it looks so ridiculous because obviously back then, like for some reason you couldn't draw stuff as detailed, I guess probably because of printing wise, whatever. But like he puts the Iron Man suit on, like he's putting on like pants and a shirt. So it's like you see him like stepping into these like metal pants and like pulling them up and stuff. It just looks so awkward and weird. I'm glad they didn't go that route with him where it's just like, oh, I have these metal pants I can put on. It's this whole piece together suit. I thought if you can just go try to find a picture of the old Iron Man comics. It looks so bad. So, so bad.
That's funny. Yeah. I can't necessarily think of anything else in terms of this movie. Like we said, there's the brief scene with Thor's hammer. Looking through really quick, you said that Whiplash was two characters. I had it here, but it's Crimson Dynamo and Whiplash, I guess.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know much about them at all, but yeah, I've read that in the trivia before. Although one other thing I noticed today for the first time is that the screenplay was written by Justin Theroux. If you don't know who that is, he was in The Leftovers. He played the main guy, Kevin Garvey, I think his name was in that. He's one of like my favorite actors. To see him, to find out that he wrote that movie, it was kind of cool. I never noticed that before.
I saw the name in the credits and it sounded familiar. I just couldn't place it. There's a lot of people that I recognized in this, like the journalist from the first one comes back. They have a brief mm-hmm. scene where Kate Mara is the one that presents him with his summons to go in front of the Congress. I'm like, maybe she wasn't then, but I'm like, she's a big actress. Like, why would they have her? Like, they had Olivia Munn as like a reporter for like 5 seconds as well. I'm like, why are these people in like these bigger actors in like these 5 second parts?
Well, back then, Olivia Munn was just like a correspondent for G4 TV. She was no one important at all. So that one was making that they made sense. Then Kate Mara was not big at the time. She did go on to actually play Susan Storm in the Fantastic Four movie. So that's another Marvel connection there, even though that movie was atrociously terrible. The one thing I was hoping they would bring out of that, though, is when she tries to hand him the subpoena, Happy says that he doesn't like being handed stuff, so she gives it to him, and Tony's like, yeah, don't hand me things. I was hoping that would play out somewhere, but they never touched on it again. I thought it would be like a setup for some sort of event or happening.
He briefly mentioned it with the strawberries when he was on his way to go apologize to Pepper, and he gave her strawberries. But yeah, no, that was... I was kind of hoping that that would play out as well. There's also brief cameos, I guess. Stan Lee, mistaken for Larry King. I always thought that was very... I love a good Stan Lee cameo. Mm-hmm. Christiane Amanpour and Bill O'Reilly, DJ AM, and Elon Musk as well.
Oh, yeah, I noticed that today too. Elon Musk was actually there playing himself. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, I didn't notice that the first time.
I read some trivia somewhere too that the electric jet and the turbo thrusters, whatever, that Tony recommends to him is like an actual thing that he developed. I don't know if they included it in the movie because that's something he was working on, or if he started working on it because of the movie, but that's a cool little trivia bit that there.
Well, I mean, Musk likes to, I feel like he sees himself almost as a Tony Stark type, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so I said about the Stan Lee cameo. I believe I mentioned this with Kevin in the previous one. I don't know if Jake and I talked about it in the first one, but I got to ask you, what do you think now? I believe there's been one film so far that hasn't, you know, that's been without a Stan Lee cameo since he's passed away. I read a thing where somebody, you know, a bunch of people suggested they should just have missing posters with his face on them in all the things going forward. What do you think about kind of the future of these without a Stan Lee cameo?
Oh, man. They didn't have one in Far From Home, right? See, I know before he passed, they were getting ready for it. They filmed a whole bunch of scenes for him.
Yeah, I think the most recent Avengers one was the last, because it was like in the 70s, or it takes place in the 70s.
Last. Yeah. So I wish they could have gotten, like, I'm kind of torn on the whole Far From Home thing, because to me, Endgame feels like the end of Phase 3. Like, that's the end of the saga. That's the Infinity Saga. It's done. It's wrapped up. Let's move on. But then they came out with Far From Home, which it's a great movie. I love it. But it much more feels like an introduction to Phase 4. And it has nothing really to do with the Infinity Saga. I wish they had kind of left that one out, because then at least we could have the entire Infinity Saga has your Stan Lee cameos. And then we start Phase 4 fresh. There's nothing in there. And then we could just kind of not move on from it, but just, you know, it's make it not part of it. But I do like the idea of having like the missing posters, or just a poster of some sort. Maybe he's on a billboard at somewhere. Like, there's so many pictures and photos and videos of him. You could throw something in there, or even like with the technology we have, you can just, I mean, they recreated Leia for episode 9. You could throw him in there somewhere. I know in the Spider-Man video game, there's a petition going around to get them to put a statue of Stan Lee in the city, just, you know, just as a memorial for him, which, if you haven't played the game, it wouldn't make sense, because his cameo in the game was just, he owns an Italian restaurant. So, like, why would you build the statue to this owner of an Italian restaurant? I mean, maybe he was a great cook, who knows, but, it'd be nice to see them throw something in there, but I wouldn't want it to be too, like, you know, blown out of proportion. Like, I don't want them to have, you know, now there's, you know, Stan Lee Tower or whatever. Just, yeah, throw a billboard, throw a poster in there somewhere. I don't know.
No, I agree. I think to go along with your comment about the Spider-Man thing, I think that was more Sony, because we know from a lot of things, Sony and Marvel have some a back and forth over who has the rights to what and who really controls what. I think that was more of a Sony saying, we're going to do this, and, you know, either you're going to be involved or not, or we're going to go forward with it or whatever. But yeah, I do think there should be something with him, because I believe I've mentioned it before, like he didn't create Captain America, but he was very influential in kind of bringing that character back when he was sort of establishing the concept of a comic book universe. You know, Captain America was a character. He brought him back and like resurrected the concept of the character and stuff. And so he got the, you know, he was even had a cameo in that, and just, it was just kind of a thing, like just a Marvel movie without a Stan Lee cameo just doesn't seem right. Even if it's just, like you said, a billboard or a missing poster or something. Like, I don't want, when you were saying, you know, about a statue and don't necessarily do something, my first thought was, oh, they could have him somewhere and have him be like a past president of the United States. But then I'm like, no, because if they do that, somebody's going to say, well, there's the Lincoln, you know, thing, there's the Washington Monument, and maybe let's build something for Stan Lee, and then they'll just have to like digitally put that in every movie from now on. And then I went, no, that we don't want that. That's a little too far-fetched, you know? Yeah. But there should be something for him.
Have you seen Into the Spider-Verse yet?
I've seen parts of it. I don't think I've seen the full thing.
Okay. I mean, that's not part of the universe, but his cameo in that, it was, I mean, he has a ton, because they just kind of, after he passed away, because it's all animated, so obviously you don't need to have him really do anything, but they put him as like just someone walking by in the background. He was on a train that Peter was riding on, but his main cameo, it's like he's owns a toy store, and the whole thing is that there's multiple Spider-Man, whatever, and the main Spider-Man dies, and someone, Miles Morales, the new Spider-Man's buying a Spider-Man mask, and Stan Lee basically says, man, I'm really going to miss him now that he's gone. And I was like, that was after he died, and I was like, I can't right now, I can't. It's it was such a sad moment, to just the irony of that scene. It was a tough one, but I mean, they could throw him in just anywhere, throw him in the background, do something. Like, I would like to see them continue it, but also at the same time, I don't want them to do a Princess Leia thing where they're just kind of throwing him there just to have him in there when he's all digitally redone and whatever.
Yeah. I think that's just about it, unless we have anything else we want to discuss with regards to Iron Man 2.
The last thing we'll touch on, I think, is the post-credit scene. I saw this in the theater. Like I said, I've seen all of them in the theater opening night on the Thursday, because that's always the best time to go, because you go with the fans that want to see there and watch the movie. But I went with my friend who had no idea about any of the stuff that was going on. So when they shot back to Thor's hammer, the entire crowd went insane. He had no idea what was going on. Did you know what was going on at that point? Did you know enough about Thor, or was that just a, okay, there's a hammer in the desert?
Well, I knew, because I had seen all of these a lot later, I knew that the Thor movie was next. So I knew, okay. I knew that Thor was there, and I knew enough about Thor to know, like, oh, that's, like, I couldn't pronounce it for probably the first few times. I couldn't, you know, pronounce the name of the hammer, but I knew enough to be like, oh, okay, that's Thor's hammer. And even if it wouldn't have been, oh, that's the next movie, I probably would have been like, oh yeah, okay, that's definitely setting up Thor. And I like that in the first few movies, except for I guess Incredible Hulk, but like we said, that wasn't necessarily one of the things. I like that they kind of referenced what was going to be coming almost immediately next, versus setting up things that were either not going to happen for a while or happening, you know, two or three movies from then or whatever. Like, I do like the fact that it was like, oh, Thor's hammer, guess what the next movie's gonna be? Thor.
Right. And then the Thor, I think they had a Captain America scene at the end of that one. And at the end of Captain America, I think there was an Avengers one. And then the Avengers one is the one that, you know, hey, guess what? Now we're gonna do Thanos. And when, yeah, we saw that opening night. Oh my God, I've never heard a theater scream so loud. It was incredible. So yeah, those were a lot of fun. But now they're the thing that I don't understand too, like, people still leave the theater. Like, we saw Endgame, and as soon as the credits started rolling, people got up and left. And I was like, have you not learned by now? There's more scenes. I don't understand that with some people.
Now, granted, I go to see movies. It tends to be, my local theater does $5 Tuesdays. So I will tend to go there on those days. It's either $5 on Tuesday or like the first film of the day tends to be, you know, like half price or whatever. So I will tend to wait because we only have pretty much the one theater, unless you want to drive like 40 minutes to go to like the really good like IMAX theater and whatever. We really only have the one. So if I wanted to push through and like if I was, I don't necessarily like huge crowds. That's one of the reasons I don't do like the Thursday night or Friday or whatever. So I'll tend to wait. I'll just pretty much stay off the internet for the weekend, and then Monday or Tuesday around noon, I'll go to see whatever new movie. So I see people there. Granted, it's the middle of the day. It's Monday, Tuesday, maybe Wednesday at the latest. And maybe people saw it by then, but I still see that same thing. I'll also be honest. My parents taught me from a very young age to sit through the entirety of the credits, even before post-credit scenes were a thing. I mean, you know, you're a, you know, you do photography and you do all that sort of stuff. I know you do a lot of research into, you know, what goes into these movies and whatever. My parents taught me from a very, you know, young age, a lot of people worked really hard and they deserve to have their names seen, even if it's just by me. Like I've been on, whether it's, you know, dates or just out with friends or whatever. I went, not too long ago, I went to see the Zombieland sequel when that was in theaters. And I didn't know whether there was going to be a post-credit scene or not, but I stayed there until the entire thing was over. And I believe I was with one of my cousins, and she was just like, I have to go to the bathroom, and I'll just meet you out there. I'm like, go. I'm like, and yeah. I mean, you know, I'll stand, I'll start walking down the steps or whatever, but I stay there until the very last scene. Cause like even the lights will have come up, you know, the workers will come in and they'll start, you know, sweeping up and they'll look at me. And there's like three or four workers just standing around looking at me like, why are you still here? And I'm just like, I'm giving the respect to the people who worked on these movies. And I feel like Marvel did, I know they're not the first people to do, you know, post credits, but I think it's a fantastic way to kind of do that same thing with people not even necessarily realizing that they're giving the people who worked on these films their due.
Yeah. I mean, as someone that went to film school at one point, like, yeah, definitely stay and, you know, I know what goes into making these movies. So you definitely want to stay and watch those and do that. But also through my Instagram, I made friends with someone else that does, you know, similar photography stuff. And she's actually is a camera assistant in Atlanta, and she actually worked on Captain Marvel. So getting to watch that and see her name pop up, and I was like, holy shit, I know that person. That's really fucking cool to sit there and watch that and see her name up on the screen. So yeah, I always stay and watch those unless like it's super late and we have to get home. But
well, yeah, there was one time I didn't drive, and the person I was with, I think it was a date, maybe like 2 or 3 years ago. They were like, I'm leaving. If you don't come with me now, like you're going to be walking or, you know, getting an Uber or whatever. I was like, okay, yeah. Like I kind of have to go now, but
yeah.
But yeah, for the most part, I do tend to stay. And like I said, I think Marvel does it well. And it's funny, 'cause when I was watching this one, actually on Disney Plus, they put it to the smaller screen and they give you the option for, you know, the majority of the screen is like click to watch whatever the next, I don't remember if it was Thor or if it was Iron Man 3, but it was like click to watch the next thing. And I had to bring it full screen again just so that I could make sure that, because I couldn't remember if there was a mid-credit scene and a post-credit scene,
right,
or whatever, but I had to click and bring it to full screen again. Just because, and it's unfortunate that they, granted, Disney didn't make these ones, but they know. Why do they, I don't know, why do they do that?
It's because they want you to keep on watching stuff and give them more money. That's all they care about. So, whatever. Yeah.
But we talked about it before. Unless we have anything else with regards to Iron Man 2, of course, you know, gonna definitely have you back because we could clearly talk about Marvel and comics and films and stuff all day. But if people want to go and see the donut picture or any of the other fantastic things that you do, where can they find you all around the internet?
I am on Instagram and on Twitter. It's Hollywood_IRL.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at JPGRB. You can find both of us at Clock Shelves on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. That's CLOCKSHELVES. Steve has actually been on another show that I do called Lost with Friends. That's how he and I became friends, is through the TV show Lost. And we talk about each episode on that podcast as well. I can't necessarily think of anything else. And we were talking before about, you know, kind of Stan Lee tributes, and I couldn't figure out a way to sort of end this show. You know, I have my signature thing on Lost, Paul and all, sort of the thing on there is I don't necessarily have a signature ending. And just through talking with a few people, I think the ending for this one, and tell me what you think. I think it's going to be, "Thanks for listening, true believers." What do you think?
That'll work.
All right. So thanks for listening, true believers.